Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Patreon for just $2 a month where you get exclusive episodes. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the Cenobite.
Yes.
Man, no. Of course, my voice lately has been almost sound like them. It's been a little better this week, but then of course I sit down to record. and I can barely fucking talk. But you know, I see Matt's voice is still getting a little more high pitched than it was.
Yeah,
it just keeps climbing.
Yeah, how are you holding up, man?
Are
your juniors okay?
They are. What's weird though is the stitches are still there, so I've got this like faux Prince Albert kind of thing going on.
That's just fucking gross.
I didn't ask for that image.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know.
I told you in text messages the other day, don't describe your balls. Are you doing on the fucking podcast?
I didn't describe a balls. I described a stitch.
It's so hard to believe that you're a team lead.
I know, right? This guy manages people.
Yeah.
It's a switch that I can turn off. I go into, you know, I'm like Rocky Balboa. I've got to get punched.
It means you're Two-Face.
Two-Face.
Two-Face. Yeah. Not a compliment.
I just say he's a little no bald bitch, but you know.
Oh wow.
But anyway, you're gonna get a lot of shit today because you made me watch this fucking movie that we're doing, okay? So
yeah.
I'm just warning you now. But other than that, how have you fellas been this week? Besides icing your walls.
Good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
That's good. I see Long on the StreamYard, you know, as we're still recording remotely, you know, we can see each other through the cameras though. And you're working on the Al Leong a little bit more there, dude. I see it's growing. The Al Leong.
Yeah, my hair.
You're working on it, man. It's growing, dude. You're gonna be full on henchman soon. Hell yeah.
Asian henchman, yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Oh,
let the beard's gotta keep growing too.
Right.
When all that goes out, you're going to have to start wearing leather gloves with the fingers cut out. Then no one's going to mess with you.
I kind of need a haircut, but like, I've been thinking about letting it grow. I mean, have you noticed that's like the middle-aged white guy thing to do now is like the mullet, not really the mullet, but like long hair's coming back, you know? There's like a lot of guys in their 30s and 40s now growing their hair long again. I've been thinking about letting it grow. I haven't decided yet.
Yeah, so, man.
Do it, dude.
Bring back my rock and roll youth. Relive the glory days when I was, at least thought I was a bad motherfucker. I probably wasn't, but, you know, I tried. I tried to be cool.
Yeah.
But in the words of Lester Bangs, I met you, man. You're uncool. So, you know. But, yeah. Well, let's get into the show then, I guess, since everybody's good. Nothing interesting in the world talking about. We have no balls to make fun of this week, so. But download this, man. This is where we tell people what we watched, streamed, checked out this week. What have you guys had the time to check out?
All I did was tried out Final Fantasy XIV online, and I've been having a blast playing
it. Awesome.
The first MMO game I've played since Star Wars Knights of the Old Star Wars The Old Republic, and Final Fantasy XIV is a really fun game. And what I love about it is that in other MMOs you had to like create separate characters for certain jobs and switch around, but in this game you have one character that could train into different jobs and you could switch him on the fly. And so you don't have to train multiple characters, which is nice. So same thing with crafting and all that too. All these other trades that you can do inside the game. Yeah, I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
That reminds me of KOTOR, because you sometimes have to switch between the droid and switch between other people depending on what skills they had, demolitions and security. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But other than that, I mean, that's been sucking up all my time. Final Fantasy XIV Online. And I did finally watch my Blu-ray copy of Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust.
Oh, cool.
And it is such an amazing animated work. I mean, it's mostly hand-drawn from what I could tell. And it's made by the same director who did Ninja Scroll and Wicked City. But yeah, I highly recommend it. This is the director's best animated film, bar none. I mean, Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust still holds up. And the English dubbing was pretty good, too. I mean, Dwight Schultz is in it. He dubs a couple of voices in there. So, yeah. But if you ever come across a copy of it, or I'll let you borrow it, just let me know. But yeah, excellent movie. One of the best animes out there.
Cool.
Yeah. Before getting that, the basic plot of Vampire Hunter D is a woman gets kidnapped by a very powerful vampire named Meyer, and D, the vampire hunter, it goes after him, gets paid a upfront fee of $20 million to rescue the daughter, and then there's a rival team of vampire hunters also going after the same mark. And it's basically those rival vampire hunting teams trying to go after, rescue the girl. And that's the basic premise of it. But the girl actually voluntarily went with a vampire, you know?
Oh, so, weird.
Yeah. So,
chicks love vampires, very, man.
Yeah. Yeah. This one didn't glitter, I don't think.
Yeah, not the glitter ones.
Yeah. But it's definitely one of the classic anime movies out there. And they only came out like in the late 90s, early 2000s. So, you know, the animation is still up to snuff compared to today's standards. So, nice. But yeah, that's my download this.
All right. I had a little bit of time this week, of course. I was homeridden until like Wednesday. It was very, very uncomfortable to walk around for a while. But I went. Oh,
those jokes are never going to get old.
I know. I bought the Halloween remake, not the Halloween remake, the Halloween direct sequel to the 1978 Halloween movie, the one where Michael Myers is being interviewed, and then Jamie Lee Curtis has a granddaughter and everything, and. They've got to stop Michael Myers one more time. And I saw that movie. I liked it.
Which one? Which?
The 2018 one when Jamie Lee Curtis.
Okay. Yeah. So you liked it, huh?
I liked it. I thought it was solid from beginning to end. I like the new mask, the rustic new mask that he dons. And it's pretty brutal. You got a couple brutal scenes in there. Very entertaining. I liked it.
Looking forward to the sequel.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be good. I good vibes towards that, second direct sequel. I also bought the Leprechaun movies because they were dirt cheap. And I remember watching them on TV. I bought one and two because one was $3 to own, and the two was $2 to own. And I had remembered, we haven't gotten to our top five yet, but there's this death that I remember in number two where the leprechaun makes this guy think that he's diving into a pair of breasts, but he's like diving into these two fan blades that cut his face up. And I was like, oh, I remember this as a kid being a brutal scene, but it's not that brutal. Not really.
Only fucking Matt.
Yeah. So for $5.
What movie was that?
Leprechaun 2.
Oh,
Yeah, it happens pretty early on too. But that's like,
was it probably bundled with Leprechaun in Space?
Oh my god, that movie is horrible.
Well, even so by your standards.
Yeah, I mean, in a good horrible, like, man, I could watch that movie and just laugh at it, you know, and just have a good old time, just making fun of how bad it is, and still enjoy watching it. That's just how I watch horror movies. Sometimes it's cool to watch a bad movie. Like, I thought about renting Jason X this week, just because, you know, it's just crazy, out of this world. You know, obviously, you know, Jason in Space, and then Leprechaun in Space. And then it's like, you know, what comes next? Are we going to get a Freddy in Space one of these days? Or?
No, Freddy's smarter than that.
Yeah, he doesn't need space. Freddy just needs dreams. But
speaking of which, before I forget to ask you, have you watched the two Hatchet movies?
I watched the first. I've seen the first Hatchet movie.
Yeah, did you like Hatchet?
And I saw the second one. That's the one where they go back after. But yeah, I like Hatchet because it's got Candyman. You've got Robert England, and then you've got the guy who played Jason for a long time. The first eight movies, he played Jason, and you basically have a Jason-esque character, but instead he uses a hatchet and everything else, rips people's faces open. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just a play on what all these blood and boob horror movies used to do. And it's I think it's worth a watch. It's cheesy. It knows it's cheesy, and that's what's cool about it. Whenever you're self-aware and you kind of play off yourself, it can be entertaining. And they're free on Prime, the Hatchet movies. So I think at least the first two. I think the first two are on Prime. I don't know about three.
That's a no for me.
And yeah. Then because of the movie we're watching, since I already owned it, I went ahead and watched Hellraiser Hellbound. That's the first Hellraiser movie I saw. Lonnie, I know you said you saw three first. Was my second. I saw three second. And I went ahead and rented that one. And then I saw four, and then I saw one. And that's the order I saw them growing up. Two, three, four, and then one. So I rented four as well. And four has some brutal deaths in there, but it primarily relies on violence and gruesome deaths to kind of get you through that movie. And that was the last theatrically released movie that Clive Barker had extensive involvement in. The rest of them he wrote, but he wasn't as deeply involved as the first four. But watch that. And the wife wanted to watch Hunger Games, so I watched like the first half of the first Hunger Game movie, and that was about it.
You sound like you just died just now.
I mean, you know, it was cool seeing you know, a young Jennifer Lawrence again, and young in her career and stuff.
I heard the second movie was the best.
Second one is the best.
Out of all those teenage book movies, though, those are at least watchable. You know?
Yeah.
Then Divergent started out well, then it fell apart. Same with the Maze Runner movies. I felt like the first Maze Runner was good, then they just fell apart. At least the Hunger Games was pretty consistent throughout all four movies. You know. So
yeah.
I'll give it credit.
Whose baby was that?
Who do you think?
Well, pretty sure it's Matt's because
I don't have
one that little. Put a boob in that kid's mouth. No.
Whose baby was that?
I didn't see much this week. I've got about two episodes left of The Boys, so I got another episode. Oh, we got two more episodes to watch. I was only on four, I guess. So I watched five and six, and Long, you know what? I take it back. The first season. The first season I really liked. The second season, I think you would like the first season, Long, but I think you get to the second season and I don't think you would like it, because the nihilistic stuff in the second season is full on and it might bother you. Let's just say it gives a whole new meaning to superhero sex.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think it's bad. I enjoy it. But it's just knowing you long, I don't know if you'll like the second season as much.
Yeah.
I think you might cringe at some of it. Not cringe in a way that you're being prudish, just being like, yeah. Oh, really? Do they really need to?
When Matt showed that picture of Homelander jacking off over... Oh, okay. I shouldn't have said this on while we're recording, but whatever. Well, pleasuring himself, you know,
over the skyscraper. I mean, you said right.
Like, I don't think I want to watch this anymore. You know, that definitely... That killed any desire to watch it, you know? So, I'm not watching some superhero, you know, pleasure himself on my television set. You know.
Well, I also feel, and I haven't finished the second season yet, but I feel that the show is doing the thing that a lot of shows do, where they keep giving you and giving you and giving you a lot of stuff and no answers. And someone, and Matt can confirm this without spoiling it, someone says you do finally get some answers in the season finale. Because I feel like they're just... We get it. We get that Homelander is this asshole. We get that these people are despicable. But, like, give us some conclusions to some of the stories. And I've heard we do get that. And I understand it's a show and they have to build several seasons. But it's just like they're doing that thing the shows do where they're building mythology, and going to end up writing themselves into holes if they don't bring some conclusions to some things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you have to wait for the last couple episodes and then last two, and you get answers.
So by next week, I'm on vacation, so I definitely will finish the second season by next week's episode for sure. And I'll have my thoughts on it. So,
cool.
But I don't think I watched any movies this week. I really want to sit down on HBO Max and watch The Invisible Man because I saw it was on there, and I really wanted to see that remake. They did of it. So maybe this week I'm off. I'll try to watch that on HBO Max. Yeah. And like long, I'm still playing. Somebody bought a copy of Star Wars Galaxies to play on the Legend server, but they never get online ever. I don't know why they bought a copy of it. Looking at you, Matt. And, so I've been playing Star Wars Legends still. And, they're actually going to release, you know what Star Wars Galaxy Legends is? It's a free based project. These programmers have created this emulator. They do it all nonprofit. And they're actually going to put out an expansion, which is crazy to think that people are doing something for free and they're actually going to expand the game. So it's pretty wild to think that a game that went offline in 2011 has a server that people are playing on, and it's actually going to get an expansion. They're going to put Bespin into the game. Which I think is pretty cool. And it's supposed to be out sometime either later this year or early next year. They're going to put out Bespin. So that's pretty cool.
Did you ever try out the Old Republic MMO when it came out in 2011?
Yeah, I did. I just coming off of Galaxies, I didn't like it as much. I found it very linear. It wasn't as sandbox as Galaxies was. So there were things that just made it not as exciting for me. You know, it's still online. You can still play it. You know.
Yeah. Was that I heard that they that. No, it's the Old Republic. It's EA's.
It's the MMO that killed Galaxies.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then also, I heard recently they had to consolidate more servers.
I believe it.
Even smaller. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I remember day one, it had like 20 servers or something like that. And then like 6 months later, they had to cut it in half. And then a year later, they had to cut that in half. And now it's like down to 6 active servers, something like that, you know? So,
yep. It's still online though. And, you know, hey, EverQuest is still online. That game's been out since what?
Man.
96, 97. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Some games survive.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. It's still around. But that's about it. So, I guess let's get into today's feature film as part of our Halloween Horrors Month. A movie that Matt's practically begged me to put on the show for a while now. So I gave in this year for Halloween Horrors and said we would do this movie, even though I knew I was going to regret it in some ways. And that is Hellraiser, a movie that is dear to Matt's heart, perhaps not his wife's heart because of what Matt did during watching this movie. Anyone who's ever listened to the show consistently as well aware by now that Matt proposed to his wife during this film. So Matt's lucky he's still standing today for that. Because anyone that knows Matt's wife, she's a sweetheart, but she's also a devil, like most women. And I mean that in the nicest way to Matt's wife. So Matt's lucky he's still standing today. But yeah, so it is Hellraiser. I'm still would like to be a birdie on the wall to see how you pulled that off. So Matt, since you picked this movie, you can summarize it.
Absolutely. So Frank Cotton is looking for this puzzle box, this gateway to unforeseen pleasures. And while he opens it, the Cenobites appear and offer him the pleasures of hell, and which he is intrigued and obliges. But the Cenobites are twisted, and they no longer know the difference between pleasure and pain. So they rip him apart, and he dies. Multiple chains ripped into him, spread apart onto the floor of the upstairs bedroom in his parents' house. His brother then moves in and is accidentally brought back to life by a few drops of blood by his brother, Larry.
He cuts his hand open.
Yeah. And then blood drops on the floor, bringing Frank back to life, who then makes sure he gets in front of Julia, Larry's wife. You know, Larry is Frank's brother. And he had an affair with his wife about a week after they got married. And he's like, hey, you can bring me back to life if you just bring people up here, kill them. I need more bodies. I need more blood. And I can become whole again. We can be together. So Julia starts, you know, baiting men, bringing them into the home and then whacking them on the back of the head with a hammer. At first, she's very shy about it. She doesn't want to do it. And then she just becomes evil and it becomes second nature. So she really, really wants Frank because yeah, she's killing all these dudes. The daughter, Kirstie, finds out, played by Heather Mellencamp. And, Kirstie immediately tries to go to the authorities and, warn her dad, but it's too late to get a hold of her dad. And Frank takes his skin so that he can hide from the Cenobites.
It's not Heather Mellencamp.
Am I? Oh, that's Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah. I'm sorry. Can't think of the name right now. I'm drunk.
Tisk.
Call myself Ashley Lawrence. Ashley Lawrence, which is her debut role. So Frank is trying to hide in Larry's skin. And Kirstie is able to barter with the Cenobites. Instead of taking her to hell, I'm going to give you the guy who escaped hell, and you can take him instead of me. So she gets Frank to agree, or Frank to spill the beans while he's wearing her father's skin, and the Cenobites rip him apart again and drag him back down to hell. And then they get a little greedy. They want to take Kirstie with them. So she solves the puzzle box and sends them back to hell and, you know, loses the puzzle box again. So now the puzzle box is lost again. And that's the end of Hellraiser 1.
I forgot that when we asked Matt to summarize the movie, we get the whole plot.
Yeah. Sorry.
He just likes to hear himself talk. That's all.
Yeah, is that what it is? I mean,
Yeah.
I do get a little bit of that, maybe, especially in this film.
A little.
So this movie is this movie is gruesome. This movie is sadistic.
Yeah, even by today's standards.
This movie is sadistic. This movie is just plain fucked up. I mean, that's the way I feel about it. From the opening scene till the very end of the movie. Why anyone would want to watch this more than one time ever blows my mind. Why anyone would propose to their fiance or girlfriend during this blows my mind. I'm not thrilled that I had seen parts of this movie before, but I never really sat down and watched the whole thing. I never really realized that the plot centered around a guy trying to come back to life because the Cenobites tore him apart. Okay, maybe I missed something in the film. Like, why did he suddenly come back? Was that part of the Cenobites' plan? Or is that a plot hole that I missed? Like, no. So all of a sudden he just appears.
Yeah, if blood spills on the spot where you die, you're able to escape back to the real world again and escape hell.
Did they explain that in exposition? Maybe I just didn't hear it.
Well, no. Also, there was a piece of his heart in between the floorboards too.
Yeah,
that soaked up all the blood.
Oh, okay. You know, maybe I just missed that.
They expand maybe this, on it.
I think the Cenobites missed a piece of Frank left on Earth when they took him, and then I guess his heart was the one piece that was not taken back to hell.
Yeah.
So I figured that's why he got resurrected, you know, because blood spilled and a piece of Frank was still left behind after the puzzle box was closed.
Yeah.
So that's my guess.
No, that's a good theory, because in Hellraiser 2, Kirsty really wants the police chief to burn the mattress that Julia died on, because she says that she can come back if that mattress gets into the wrong hands. And a doctor interested in the cube puts a mental patient on top of it who's bleeding, and she comes out of the mattress and starts eating him in the second one. So
lovely.
Could be, yeah, DNA or some part of her left in that mattress, kind of like the heart under the floorboard. Blood touches it. Oh. You're able to come back.
And that's my thing. I don't want to sound like too harsh on this movie, because like I do think there's a lore there that it feels like from what you're saying, if you watch part two, you get a little bit more of the lore that. But I just felt. It felt a little rushed maybe in this one, because it's only an hour and a half. I will give it credit for the special effects. I thought they're very well done. The Cenobites are genuinely scary. The blood, the deaths and the blood scenes are genuinely gruesome and well done. The lighting on this film is terrible. You can't see half the shit that's going on. Clive Barker, for a first time director. I don't know if he had a cinematographer tell him what to do on the set, but the shots are framed very poorly in a lot of scenes, which is a little bothersome. And I guess I feel like he was going for a Hammer Horrors type feel to the film, where it's real tight and real, try to give it a sense of compression to make it scarier, but it just comes across as looking shot poorly. And maybe that's in a sense for him being a first time director. But I think as a writer, I think the story is there. It just felt like it could have been expanded upon better. Like, this feels like there's enough sci-fi horror lore in this that it could make for a really good remake if it had a good writer. And I think it's a cool enough story that you could tell the story without the blood and guts, you know, so much. You know, and I'm not saying it has to be dumbed down, but it doesn't have to be as gross as it was, you know? Because this is extremely fucking violent, even for 1987, you know.
Tons of corn syrup.
Long, you had never seen this before, right?
Right. Yeah, and...
your reactions, man.
I actually liked this movie. And I really like how original it felt compared to what was going on then. Because back in the 80s, I mean, there was just slasher picks, and if you didn't have your slasher, you had your what's the other popular genre in the 80s? Like Supernatural?
Yeah. Topics,
you know?
Phantasm.
Stuff. Phantasm, all that. I mean, Phantasm was pretty original on its own, too.
Right, yeah.
Don't get me wrong. You know, the 80s definitely had a lot of things going on as far as a variety, and can't fault the 80s for that. But yeah, I think Hellraiser was created just to see how far they could go as far as the violence and gore factor.
Yeah.
But there's one standout scene that no one's mentioned yet, and that's the resurrection scene. I think that was an amazing piece of practical special effects.
Yes.
Given that the budget of this movie was only $1 million. $1 million is all they made from it. And
well, they didn't buy any lights.
Yeah. Yeah. And the $1 million budget and went on to make 13 million. Ooh. So it still made a profit.
Yeah, 14 times its budget.
Yeah, 14 times its budget. And the funny thing about it also is when I saw the New World Pictures logo shine up, beginning of the movie, it's like, this is Roger Corman's movie studio.
Yeah.
You know? So, overall, I liked it. Pretty much everything that Mark had criticized about the movie, I agree with. So I didn't want to beat a dead horse over it, but the positives, I liked the father character. He was really cool, very normal, played straight by Andrew Robinson, who you might recognize from Dirty Harry as the psycho killer. Mm-hmm. In Dirty Harry. And, and I like how the movie, the first half of it was focused on Julia and her fall from being normal-ish to obsessed killer. And the movie pivots halfway towards Kirsty, and they changed heroines mid-movie, which is pretty cool. And hats off to just, changing the plotting formula a bit. But the special effects still hold up a little too well.
Yeah, I thought the effect work was really good.
Yeah. My only criticism was the hallway scene, the hellish hallway scene of the big giant puppet thing chasing after Kirsty. That looked a little pretty bad. And I kind of like the homeless guy at the very end of the movie
who turned into he's creepy.
Skeletal dragon. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. It's like, oh, there goes the box.
What's so funny?
I like the movie a lot. So I like it for its original vision. So.
What's funny about the special effects is that they asked Clive Barker, who he got to do those effects. And they're like, we had so little money left over for the special effects. We paid some French guy. So he got the name of some guy that dabbled in special effects. And that's who they got to do it.
They were so impressed with his special effects that they gave him screen credit, so. Mm-hmm. I mean, back in the 80s, they never gave screen credit for practical effects unless it was really well made.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought the effects were well done. The Cenobites, the makeup work is really well done. The rotoscopy animation effects for the box and all that looked really good, considering the budget they had. I just wish they would have spent some money on some lights to light the film up a little bit.
Yeah.
The guy who plays Pinhead, of course, he went on to make quite a career.
Yeah.
Yeah. Went on to quite a career playing this character. Appears at a lot of conventions even now. And the strange thing is like he's super nice, but yet he plays this really creepy, creepy character. And he does a really good job. I mean, he's genuinely frightening. Like, he plays it so straight and says these terrible things out of his mouth with such a straight face that, he's a bad dude, and he's kind of like got this dark humor to him, that's don't cry, your tears are a waste of good suffering, or whatever he says. It's like,
Yeah, that's a good. That's a good.
That's kind of fucked up and evil. Yeah. You know, it's like.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I just remember as a kid coming in on this movie, my dad was watching it, and I always remember the guy being pulled apart scene, which happens twice at the beginning, and again at the end of the movie, and that terrified me for years as a kid. I like would always not want to watch Hellraiser because remember seeing this guy get ripped apart by chains and. Thanks, Matt, for making me relive that. Yeah.
You're welcome.
So what was going through your, like, I have to ask, since we're doing this movie and we'll never bring it up again, but what made you propose while watching this? Was it planned? Was it unplanned? Like, what did it you was, do?
It was planned, unplanned. So I had
ADD.
Yeah. It basically long. I had been talking to Jackie's best friend at the time, Holly, and I was like, you know, Jackie, she's, you know, very much the romantic type, and I was like, she probably, you know, I should take her to the Woodlands Waterway, you know, we're just gonna walk and look at the lights that they have out there, and then I'm gonna ask her right there on the water with the lights and that's going to be cool. And she happened to come over, and I was like, you know what? I just got to ask her. And so I just put the ring in my pocket, and she had planned to come over so that she could watch Hellraiser with me, because I was adamant on having her kind of work through these horror movies that she hadn't seen and just kind of get her accustomed to horror movies. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put it in my pocket. And if she notices it, then I'll propose. And
you did not fucking think this through.
I was just like, you know what? This is my coin flip.
You should have said it was a boner.
I probably could have. And then she's like, there's something hard in your pocket. And I was like, oh, I wonder what it is. And she was like, okay, you know, it's probably your keys or something. And she was like, what? And she was just taking off balance. And, you know, at first she, you know, thought it was great because I proposed to her and we had been dating for 7 years. So she loved it. And then, you know, afterwards she was like, wait a second, this wasn't exactly romantic. And something smells here.
Hey, she's catching on.
Yeah. What's going on? Distraction. And then that's how Jake was born 9 months later. And had to distract her. It was a costly distraction.
Well, it's okay.
And shotgun wedding followed and led up to today.
I mean,
but yeah, that's just kind of how it happened. On kind of planned, unplanned, on a whim, random stuff, you know, something I could cook up.
On behalf of Matt, I'm sorry, Jackie. Yeah,
she would agree with you.
When I was married, I forgot to get down on a knee. I was so nervous that I just took the ring out and I just asked. I forgot to do the traditional knee thing, so I guess we all have our moments. It doesn't work like he does in the movies.
No, I remember joking that, hey, you know, I have the engagement ring right here, and she's right there on the couch watching whatever. I'll just walk straight to the door, take out the box, and just fling it at her feet, and I'll just say, you know what to say.
You know what to say. Like you're Marshawn Lynch. You know why I'm here.
Just fling it at her while she's sitting on the couch, and it's like, you know the answer. Let's get this done. No. And then put on my cool Matrix shades on.
Yeah.
No. No.
So
and now 11 years later, I'm divorced, and
shit happens.
I didn't propose to her like that.
It happens, man.
So. How do you guys rate Hellraiser? Matt, I guess you get two ratings. One, how would you really rate it? And two, how would you rate it because you proposed during it?
if I were to rate it based off of the sentimental value of it and how I, you know, feel about it with all those experiences, it's going to be rated much higher. The rating that I give it probably has a little bit of everything in it. And, I would say a B minus is probably what I would rate it as. I think it did a lot of good things. Did some things that could probably, you know, be perceived to be redone. Probably by Clive Barker too. Clive Barker probably like, maybe I should have filmed that in 78 millimeters so that the low lights didn't, you know, seem so low. And
he's got to be pushing
so dark.
He's got to be pushing almost 70 years old by now, don't he?
He's old, man. He helped in the remake, which you didn't hear about the remake because remake wasn't that great. It's a franchise that as a whole is probably one of the, you know, worst looking at it as a whole. It's got two good movies. I'd say one and two are good. Three kind of falls off.
He just turned 68. So yeah.
Yeah. Three falls off. Four, you know, barely limps by, and the rest, kind of, you know, a jumbled up mix. You know, they all rely on violence after three, to be relevant, in my opinion. I haven't rewatched Deader or Inferno or Hellseeker as of late, but I watched them probably in the 2010s and worked my way through them, and that's kind of how I felt about them then. But I think B minus is appropriate for this movie. Trying to take as much as my own personal bias out of it, but big props to the special effects and the story and the lore and creating this universe.
For me personally, I give it a B. I liked it, and it made me squeamish in some scenes. Yeah. But overall, I liked how it kept things going. Felt like a brisk pace for me, personally. And mainly because it's just, you know, the direction was so odd. I'm like, what is going on? You know, but I didn't notice the lighting flaws as much as you did, Mark, but yeah, I liked it. I could see why it has its place in the horror fandom, so I give it a B.
I give it an F.
How about you, Mark?
An F for fucked up. I mean, I don't think I can go quite as high as a B. I guess a B minus, just because it created a mythology that, you know, I mean, whether they were DTV movies or not, I mean, it created a lot of sequels and a franchise that is very popular. A lot of people created an iconic horror character. You know, I mean, I might even stretch it to a B. I can't go B plus. I don't like it that much. Mm-hmm. I will probably will never watch it again. And I'm okay with that. one and done.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, and the thing also, as far as the truly horror movies that we've seen, I don't think The Thing is the movie The Thing has any chance of being scared away from that top spot for this year for a scary ass movie and well made movie. You know,
yeah.
That's a pretty high watermark.
Yeah, I agree. But, and as Hellraiser, as creepy as it is, just the way Pinhead acts and the deaths, I wouldn't say it's scary. It's just because they don't use jump scares or suspense. It's pretty much all right there.
No,
it's more they use gruesome and make you like, okay, what's going on? So it's not scary in that sense. It's scary more in the what the hell did I just watch sense. Yeah.
So. Yeah. There's definitely a sense of dread.
Yes.
Permeating through this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dread and not suspense, but dread, a very low lying, oh, this is screwed up. I hope she doesn't end up like Frank.
And it's only an hour and a half long, which keeps it well paced. I think if it was longer, it probably would not work as well. I think it's just right.
Yep.
But yeah.
Yeah. That's fair.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Now you've got to watch two, Mark. Gotta watch Thor too.
Fuck off, Matt.
As far as this, as far as this month goes, The Thing, that was the first one we watched, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The Thing definitely had its gore and suspense, the whodunit factor going on there. Friday the 13th was more of a classic slasher. It has a kind of a gore fest in a way, but not like The Thing or freaking Hellraiser. It's like the middle child between it. And then now this movie, Hellraiser.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, anybody got a cigarette? Because they're kind of... this has been a pretty tough month so far.
Well, don't worry, Long.
Got to keep our fortitude.
We're doing a very safe movie next week. No.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let's do our weekly top five then. Top five kills in horror films. We're going to get our murder on this list. Matt, why don't you start it, man? Your number five horror kill.
It's 1974's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's a double kill that happens with one of the couples, where Leatherface hits the man in the head, and he's just his legs are shaking and blood's running down his chest. It's pretty brutal. It's pretty graphic. Then he throws him on the table.
Fast.
Yeah,
it's fast.
And he takes the girl and he throws her on the hook, and she's like screaming, trying to wiggle off the hook, but she can't because it's all the way through her. And he's proceeding.
You want me to watch that? You want me to watch that one day on the show? Fuck, man.
Yeah, it's classic. Hooper, man. Hooper is classic. It's right up here with this. You can watch Hellraiser. You can watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The only thing is Texas Chainsaw Massacre 74 isn't paced as well as this film. That's the only thing.
I'm an innocent angel. I can't watch this stuff.
Innocent angel, my ass. All right. My number five is actually more of a subdued type of a death scene, and it doesn't even involve a human. It's the scene in the remake of The Ring, where Naomi Watts' character is traveling to the Ghost Girl's original origins. And the scene of the horse that just suddenly freaks out on the ferry ride, on the ferry boat, just freaks out and jumps over the railing of a boat. And you could feel the boat get chopping up the poor horse with its propellers. Yeah, but you don't see the actual, but you see the blood float up. You see the boat shake, and then you kind of hear the death of the horse underwater. That always haunted me because it was a poor animal.
I know I saw that movie. Yeah. I just don't remember it for some reason.
Yeah.
It was whenever she was going to go visit the well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that scene always stuck with me throughout the years. And it's like, it's a poor animal. You don't want to see animals suffer.
No.
Yeah.
Poor horse.
That's my number five. It's off the beaten path, but to me, that stuck with me.
Yeah.
That's good. My number five is, maybe it's not a true horror film, but it is horror. And that's the death of Quentin Jaws, man. It's one of the most iconic scenes in the film where Quentin is trying to, survive, but he knows he can't. He just decides to take on Jaws and, like, whatever, motherfucker, come get me. And we know how it ends, as we've.
Yeah, you see him, see the shark clamped down on his bare stomach.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
That is a horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason they have people sit in the water and watch that thing. It's scary.
And,
it's scary to watch that thing in the water.
One of the great films of our time, but Quentin's death and Jaws.
Rip.
Number four
for me, I've got Patrick Bateman taking out Jared Leto in Psycho to Hip to Be Square. I just, the music and then just the upbeat.
The remake Psycho that everyone hated?
Yeah.
Really?
American Psycho. American Psycho.
Oh, you said Psycho. That's what I was like.
With Christian Bale. Yeah. Not the one with Vince Vaughn. No, that one's horrid.
That was Jared Leto?
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's sitting on the couch. And he's like, "What do you got all this newspaper here for? You got a pet?"
I hated that movie so much that I didn't retain any of it. I think that's probably why.
That's probably the best scene in the movie. He does chase hookers with a chainsaw. That's pretty out there.
Well, you know how you already know how I feel about satire films, and that's why American Psycho, I'm just like, nah.
Yeah.
My number four is the Blood Fountain's death scene in the Nightmare on Elm Street, the first movie.
Nice.
It's just, you know, you see that poor character, Johnny Depp, get pulled into the bed, and then all of a sudden, all this blood just spurts out. And it's a simple trick. All they did was they flipped the camera upside down and then just poured the blood through the hole. But it's a very memorable scene. Can't forget that. So that that's my number
bloody
four.
Bloody as hell, man.
Yeah.
My number four is actually from Elm Street 3, which we covered last year. And it's the marionette death where Freddy's got him like a puppet. And it's just really... It just sticks with you. It's the most memorable. Yeah. It's probably the most memorable scene in all of Dream Warriors. And it just, it gives me heebie jeebies just thinking about Freddy using his veins for, anyway. We move on.
That's number nasty. Three. His veins look very nasty.
Yes.
Yeah. For me, I've got the 2004 Saw movie, the reverse bear trap when she has to get out of it and she has to take a scalpel and kill. The person next to her and dig the key out of their entrails so that she can use it to get the mask off before it opens up her face and splits it reverse. Yeah,
that was pretty gross.
Yeah.
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 Why do we pick this top five?
Number three.
Yep.
Did you already go?
Yeah, I went. That was three for me.
What was your three?
The Saw reverse bear trap scene.
Oh, yeah. Right. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
My number three is actually kind of a... No, it's not really a tie, but the death of the old lady in the Hatchet movie. Where the dude just freaking... rips her face apart and then rips her neck, her throat out, and then just decapitates her.
That's brutal,
with his
man.
Bare hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't forget that scene. and then that's kind of tied with it wasn't really a, you don't actually see the kill, but Justin Long's character in Jeepers Creepers movie.
Yes.
Where you just see a skin hanging facing the camera, and you just see the monster just doing whatever, butchering the rest of the character's body for his next hibernation
scene. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's a screwed up ending, too, for one of the lead actors. But yeah, Jeepers Creepers and the death of the old lady scene in Hatchet are my number threes. Go ahead, Mark. What's your number three?
My number three... you know, in a horror movie that I actually really do like a lot, and that is 28 Days Later, Brendan Gleeson's character. You know, they just get out of a horrible situation. You think they survived. They looks up at the bird, and the blood drops into his eye, and he turns rage, and you're just like, it's emotional. It's scary. It's like, oh my God, because you feel so bad for him too, you know. And it's Danny Boyle's direction on that scene is amazingly so well shot. And it's just, it's a horrifying death to have to watch Brendan Gleeson's character go through that after just surviving a horrible situation.
Mm-hmm.
Good one. For number two, I've got Drew Barrymore in Scream, where she's just gutted from top of her torso down and then strangled with her own intestines, left to hang for her parents to find her.
That's gross.
Yep.
Anybody hungry?
No.
Spaghetti?
My number two is kind of a cheat, but really any death scene or kill scene in any of the Hellraiser movies.
Yeah.
They're all pretty screwed up, and any death scene in Hellraiser I mean, come on, who being torn apart by hooks and
like, you're either ripped apart, decapitated, and Hellraiser
skinned alive.
Skinned alive. Yeah. No problem.
My number two is from The Thing, when he tries to revive Norris, and the Thing comes out of Norris and pulls him in, and it's really gross, and you know, it's like probably the most horrifying scene in the movie. And then it turns into the little spider thing and all that. Whole sequence of events is just pretty disturbing. You know? It's the kind of stuff that gives you nightmares. If you imagine letting one of our children watch that scene in The Thing, they wouldn't sleep for a fucking week. You know?
Yeah.
Luke saw it whenever I was watching it, but Luke's different. He's very, very different.
Okay. What's your number one, man?
The Jesus wept scene from this film. I think it deserves it. He's just getting pulled apart and his face is getting stretched. And then he just explodes, skin, blood, guts all over the room. Pulled in every direction.
You stole my idea. No, I'm joking. No, I cheated, though. I said any Hellraiser did. My number one is actually the chestburster scene in Alien.
Nice.
There's just so much subtext behind that death.
That's
It happens.
That's my number one too.
My number one. Yeah. The alien chestburster scene shocked audiences and even shocked me because I never expected it to happen. Never knew about the zeitgeist of that scene. You know, I went in watching this movie blind, not knowing about that scene, amazingly. And, that's my number one chestburster scene.
The crew didn't even know about it either. That's why they were, like, taken aback, too, and it took a while for them to try and get back to trying to help him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Mark. Well, yeah, you want to expand upon?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the same reasons you said. It's like, it's one of the those jump scare scenes that just you always remember the first time you saw it. I was the same way. I had, like a lot of people our age, I had seen Aliens first. And then when I went back and watched Alien and that scene happens, I was like, oh my God, this is like so horrifying and scary. And it sticks with you because, you know, there is a chestburst scene in Aliens, but it's so quick and it's like, you don't really think nothing of it. It kind of happens fast. But the one in Alien is a buildup, and it's genuinely frightening and scary, and amazing special effect work too. But it's so iconic. I mean, it's hard not to have it on top of your list, and unless you're Matt and you just like really gross things, you know, and you don't put Alien on your list. Yeah. So So that's our top five horror movie kills. Getting our murder on.
Yes.
So
yeah, buddy.
Let's do some.
And I'm sure there's a bunch of horror fans out there that are like, why didn't you pick this scene?
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh my God, you guys are such noobs.
aficionados. Let's do a little bit of news. Long, I know you like to hate on Willow. I still don't know why, but
I don't hate it.
I thought you hated him.
I don't hate it.
Because we're going to...
I just didn't feel anything for it. That's the difference.
I bet sometime in 21 we're going to do Willow on the show. But they went ahead and greenlit the sequel television series for Disney Plus, which I think is kind of cool. I think it's a good mythology. I think there's cool characters. Obviously, Val Kilmer's probably not going to play Mad Mardigan as he's... ill and doesn't act as much anymore, but Warwick Davis is coming back to play Willow, so I'm down for it. Always felt they should have made a sequel to the movie.
Hello.
And they never did, so we'll see. Have you ever seen Willow, Matt?
I've never seen it. I tried to buy a copy.
It's on Disney Plus.
And it's on Disney Plus. Yeah. Okay, because I bought a copy on eBay and I found it for cheap, and it was a Korean bootleg that was in Korean.
Well, the DVDs and Blu-rays were sky high, but they re-released it last year on Blu-ray, so a lot of the prices have come down. You can get it for cheap now, but it is on Disney Plus. So,
okay,
hey, you should watch it. Have to watch that. Now, Zack Snyder's Justice League cut is turning into much more. He's bringing Jared Leto in, and I can't think of the actor's name who plays Deathstroke, to film scenes with them in this version of his Justice League. Not sure quite how that's going to work, because if you think of the narrative of the Justice League film that we did get, I'm like trying to figure out where they're going to put Joker in this thing, but I guess we see what Snyder does.
Joe Manganiello.
Yeah, I knew it was Joe. I couldn't think of his last name.
His last name is hard to
pronounce. I did think he looked like a badass Deathstroke with the little post-credit scene, and always wanted them to do more with him. So we'll see what they do. So still excited for it. A24 Films, which is a subsidiary of Universal and Blumhouse, is going to do a sci-fi reimagining of Bride of Frankenstein called The Bride. And Scarlett Johansson has signed on to play the part. You know, Blumhouse and A24 have done a lot of good things the last couple of years. A lot of critical praise for stuff they've done. So, you know, I think if they're going to do something like this, you just wait and see how it turns out, you know. And they've done some bad stuff, too, like their Fantasy Island horror film that they came out recently. That wasn't well received. But for the most part, A24 and Blumhouse have done a lot of good stuff. So we'll see. Scarlett Johansson playing the bride. And
Matt, have you seen Hereditary?
The Bride of Terry?
Hereditary.
Hereditary. No, I've seen Splice, but I haven't seen Hereditary.
What does Splice have to do with anything?
Low paced, but very.
Well, it's kind of in that same genre, the sci-fi.
I think Hereditary is on
Creature.
Hereditary
is on.
No, it's not sci-fi.
It's on Amazon Prime, I think. Hereditary.
Okay, might have to watch that.
Yeah.
And lastly, Tim Burton is going to produce a new version of the Addams Family for television. No word yet whether it's going to be for a streaming service or what I guess they are. It's been green light by the studio to start making it, and I guess they're going to shop it around. So, yeah, you know, Tim Burton.
Which movie?
The Addams Family. They're going to do a new television version. Being produced by Tim Burton. So, little Halloween news, I guess, there. So. But yeah, that's it. Did he produce the original films? He may have. I don't know. I know Barry Sonnenfeld directed them. So that's all the news I got, though. So unless you guys had anything I forgot to mention. So nope. Yeah.
No.
All right. Well, we have a week left on our Halloween Horrors Month. We're going to do a safe film, a film that you can watch and not be scared of. We always do a kid film every year to lighten things up. We did Nightmare Before Christmas, and last year we did Paranorman. So this year we're going to do Monster House.
We'll be back tomorrow night. If anything happens, call the police and hide in your closet.
He knows that.
Have fun tonight, okay?
Every neighborhood has a house with a secret.
Awesome kite.
There's something going on in that house.
This is why nobody will sit next to us at lunch.
You'll see, no ghosts.
Cheddar, come back, please.
Cheddar, I'm serious.
Executive producers Robert Zemeckis and Steven Spielberg.
Oh no!
When no one will listen.
Don't go any further!
Are you guys mentally challenged? If you are, I'm certified to teach you baseball.
when no one believes.
The house grabs things and pulls them in and eats them.
We'll see you later.
It's up to them to save the neighborhood.
We have to fight back.
Whoa, 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 whoa!
I don't want to go inside a monster.
I say it's worth a shot.
Yes, I agree. Let's do it.
Get ready to cross over.
What are you weirdos up to?
Oh, nothing.
To the other side of the street.
There's something in the house just tried to eat us.
No more Mountain Dew.
Don't make a sound.
If those are the teeth and that's the tongue, then that must be the uvula.
Oh, so it's a girl house.
What?
Don't make a move.
Freeze! Tree?
And whatever you do, don't go on the lawn.
Don't look back! I look back!
Monster House.
Stupid house.
Directed by Gil Kenan.
And I remember watching this once, and I remember it being a fun film. So I look forward to watching it. I remember there being a lot of adult jokes in this. Am I correct to remember that?
Yeah. I don't recall.
There's a couple.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, the old man, I think, makes a lot of adult jokes.
But I don't know if it's streaming anywhere. Well, I think it's streaming on the Peacock app. But I found a copy in Half Price Books for like $4. So I bought a copy of it. And so that's next week's show is covering Monster House. And if I get everything done in time, y'all might even get the episode on Halloween Day next week. I might release a little bit early since it is our last Halloween movie before we get into November. And we've got some good stuff coming up in November. So excited about that. Yeah, that's all I got this week, though. As always, RebelRadioPodcast.com. If you want to join Patreon, it's just $2 a month for exclusive episodes. Resident Evil is going to be the October movie, which will be out next week. It's not recorded yet, but it will be in the next few days. So, which is kind of my fault because I slacked off and didn't get watched yet. So that's coming. But as always, thanks for listening to the show. We appreciate it. Our downloads have been going up, so people are finding us. We appreciate any of those new listeners. We're on Amazon Music now, of course, if you prefer to listen there, which means you can say, hey, Alexa, let's listen to the Rebel Radio Podcast or something like that, and it'll find us. And that's kind of cool.
I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah. But as always, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long the Hellraiser.
And remember, as always, I hate Matt for making me watch this shit again and just go there and do it.
Do it.
Do it.